We're looking more closely at how Native American history and culture is taught in our Wisconsin schools and elevating Indigenous perspectives and voices. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. American Indian Studies is sometimes called Act 31. It dates back to 1989, the state law requiring all students to learn about the history, culture, and tribal sovereignty of Wisconsin's federally recognized tribes. But there's more work to be done as educators weave tribal history into the curriculum. How much do you know about Wisconsin First Nations? Were there things you learned in school about Native Americans that were biased and stereotypical? How did you come to realize that? It's 800-642-1234. David O'Connor is American Indian Studies consultant at the State Department of Public Instruction and a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate, and thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Good morning. Let's start with who you are. You are Anishinaabe, part of a collective group of First Nations people. Could you tell us about the deeper meaning of Anishinaabe?
So I'm a member, as you indicated, I'm a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa or Ojibwe. And in terms of, as you just alluded to, I'm Anishinaabe. And when I translate into English, it means basically the people. And so a lot of times, as someone who's very proud to come from my community and was born and raised there up in Bad River, up in northern Wisconsin, but I've been living almost 20 years now, my life down here in Madison, but my heart and home is always up in northern Wisconsin, especially someone who grew up on Lake Superior itself, probably about a couple minute drive from where I grew up. And so it's a big part of who I am, my identity, a big part of who my family is, and today as a father and husband as well. So,
when you traveled back up to home, what is that like for you when you step foot?
It just brings back a lot of good memories. Yeah. Making new memories with my own family today. As I mentioned, I'm a father to a 5 and 3 year old, and so a lot of times I get be in those spaces or get those opportunities. It's a great opportunity to show my children, you know, where I come from and where I grew up. But also things that, you know, our communities are changing as well, meaning in terms of doing some amazing work, helping our communities for either our elders, our youth. And so a lot of times that is what my family, my wife as well, see some of those opportunities and see what, you know, how things have changed and grown over time. But at the same time, what are some things that are still the same?
I imagine, David, that education and teaching is really at the core of who you are as a person. And what led you to your path at Department of Public Instruction and for the past 9 years guiding teachers on Wisconsin First Nations?
It's both a personal and professional journey. Personally, as we just talked about, being a member of one of our nations that call Wisconsin home. That's a big part of it. I always think it's important that as Native people, as Indigenous people of our state, that our stories and our narratives are not only included as part of those conversations, but as a big part of our dialogue, our storyline that we have in Wisconsin. And so for me, I think it's important that we think about how we include those narratives or stories into our teaching and learning as well, which led into me to my role here at the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. So I do a lot of work with school districts across the state and or pre-service education programs. And as you talked about early on, one of my main efforts is to make sure that I provide instruction on history, culture, and tribal sovereignty of Wisconsin, American nations, and tribal communities. And I also emphasize tribal communities, including not only our 12 nations that call Wisconsin home, but our urban Native communities as well, making sure those stories are narratives are also included in that conversation as well. Get the fortunate opportunity to also provide training at many different conferences, workshops across our state on American Indian Studies and education. I get the fortunate opportunity to serve as a liaison in our state to not only our tribal nations, but those nations that have tribal education departments, the mm-hmm. Wisconsin Indian Educational Association, Great Lakes Indian Tribal Council, as well as the Special Committee on State Tribal Relations. But coming full circle back to that personal journey on why I do this work or why am I led me to this work as a parent. I always want my daughters to grow up in a better world tomorrow. Yeah. I want them to see themselves reflected in their education in many different ways. I want to make sure that their histories and cultures are reflected in both a strong and resilient way so that not only do they see themselves, but their peers see them as well in that conversation.
Yeah, and passing it with care to the next generation. We're talking with David O'Connor, who is American Indians Studies Consultant for the State Department of Public Instruction, where he works with school districts and so many organizations on their lessons, on their curriculum about Wisconsin's tribal communities. You can join in. What questions do you have about how Native history is taught in schools around the state? What are some things you've learned about Native Americans in school? What do you wish you learned more about? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. David, you put this distinction between teaching about culture and teaching culturally. And you say about, you know, teaching culture is about foods, festivities, heroes, and holidays. What does it mean to teach culturally?
That's a great question. That's something that's a big part of my trainings and professional development opportunities I provide with educators across the state quite a bit. As you talked about early on, a lot of times when I talk to educators about what does it mean about teaching about cultures, a lot of times the response I get back, it's, you know, like you said, the foods, festivities, heroes, and holidays. But, you know, the idea about teaching culturally to me is where you as an educator become a guide with your students, meaning that you're actively learning with him or her, have an opportunity to participate as well as in their understanding of the content being shared or explored. So I think back to growing up, as example, some of the educators that were, I felt they were doing this work before that term was being done or talked about, always learned with me, not just, you know, then always just teach me, I guess you could say. There's one thing to give content, but it's also one thing to actively engage in conversation. And so there was times where a lot of times I would share things or talk about different things where the educator or the teacher would learn with me. And it was that reciprocal relationship where I had a lot of times where I was learning, they were learning as much as I was learning from them. And so a lot of times I think about teaching culturally, there's a lot of different components that are a part of that. And so one of the things I always talk about is pedagogical practices. A lot of times, you know, utilizing oral histories as well as stories. As I talked, you heard me talk about early on, when I think one of the most important things is listening to people's stories. I think that, you know, think about, I think that's a lot of times, I think when you listen to people's stories, both listen and hear, which I always tell people are two different things. It definitely helps you understand some of the content a little bit differently. I think a lot of times with that being said, I think having students share their own lived experiences as well as their families, kind of like what I just talked about early on and why I do this work. The utilization of as well as our primary and secondary sources when we teach about Wisconsin American histories and cultures is important. I also think it's also important that we think about helping individuals understand personal sovereignty.
Yeah.
I think each of us as individuals have personal sovereignty. We make choices every day, right? I find what kind of foods I want to eat, what television shows I want to watch, different things like that. But also at the same time, I'm understanding what is sovereignty.
Yeah.
Well,
I was just going to say, you know, tribal sovereignty, referring to the right of Native Americans to govern themselves. How do you go about teaching that?
Sure. So one of the things I always try to have them understand is how do you break that down? And so I always have them break down the word sovereignty first. And I also have them understand how you break down tribal sovereignty. And so the simplest way I always try to break down sovereignty by itself is it's the right to self-rule, self-govern. And tribal sovereignty is inherent, meaning we've always had it. And so when we as nations were signing treaties with different nations, or in this case, the United States, we retained our rights. Not were given. I want to emphasize that we retained our rights. So as example, as Ojibwe or as an Anishinaabe person, we retained our rights to hunt, fish, and gather, both on reservation as well as off reservation, as example. And so when you think about how you look at it from a teaching lens, a couple years back, I had a fortunate opportunity of being at a training workshop, and I was talking with different educators about sovereignty, and one of the educators in the training stood up and said, David, I teach tribal sovereignty every single day. And I said, can you tell me, first and foremost, what grade level do you teach? She said, I teach 4K and 5K. Mm. And I'll be honest, at first, I was really like, that's a pretty
skeptical
interesting, it's a topic that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how you incorporate that into your teaching and learning. I think she picked up on my cues that I was kind of like, I don't want to say doubting her, but just kind of like puzzled. Mm. And so she said, every single day, David, I teach my children how to make and maintain promises.
Oh.
She said, last time I checked, that's treaty making 101.
Oh, wow.
I'll be honest with that moment. I was just kind of like, here's a mic. That's a mic drop moment because I'm done. You know, the rest of the training, I'm done. You can have the floor. I basically was thinking about my mind, but it was just it goes back to what we just talked about teaching culturally. You know, here I'm providing training or professional development opportunities, but I'm learning with my students or learning with the participants in this case, mm-hmm. Just as much as I hope they're taking away from me.
David O'Connor is the State Department of Public Instruction's consultant on American Indian Studies. You can join in. Have you read historical accounts of Wisconsin First Nations? What stood out to you about what you learned? What questions do you have about Act 31 requiring Native American studies in our schools? Are you a teacher? What lessons resonated with your students? Have you changed how you deliver them? Share your perspective, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're exploring Indigenous education in Wisconsin and where it goes from here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A name for the history books is Ada Deer, who has spent a lifetime advocating for Native rights and social justice. Here's Ada Deer on our program in 2019, talking about her story and life work ensuring sovereignty for tribal nations.
One of the most important things that I've done with my life is to, first of all, fight for be part of that struggle and help people become knowledgeable about their tribal responsibilities and that they could help in bringing about significant change.
What do you want to know about the people and stories in bringing about self-determination for all tribes? What Native stories and traditions would you like to share? Join in 800-642-1234. David O'Connor is DPI's consultant on American Indian Studies and stays with us. David, just hearing Ada Deer there, what comes to mind and how teachers teach about Ada Deer?
Certainly. First and foremost, I just want to say, you know, I've had the fortunate opportunity to become friends with Ada. I first became friends with her back in fall of 2000 when I came down to University of Wisconsin-Madison as an undergrad student. At the time, she was the director of American Indian Studies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was talking with my parents one day, I was sharing with them, I just individual named Ada Deer on our campus, and they said, you better go talk to her, have a conversation with her, and introduce yourself. And she had a good relationship with not only us, your father as an example, but she had a good relationship with your grandparents. Mm-hmm. And she'd go, you know, pay respects and talk, you know, just let her know that who you are and where you come from. And ever since then, you know, I've always been honored to be in that space with her and talk with her. And have an opportunity not only to but always learn from her. And one thing I always tell educators quite a bit, and I do talk about Ada in my training because I use one quote from her, talk about tribal sovereignty. And one thing I always tell people is that if I could do one of a millionth what she's done in her lifetime, I'll be happy.
Oh.
That's how much I look up to her, admire her for everything that she not only has done, but continues to do every single day. And so I just appreciate it. Not only I'm honored to call her my friend and colleague, so.
Mm. I would imagine, too, that Act 31 opens up more opportunity to talk about her work and to bring attention to not just Ada Deer, but other Native communities and Native Americans who have done incredible work who might not get noticed.
Certainly, I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, it's kind of go back to that conversation or that point I made earlier about, you know, there's a lot of people in our state historically as well as today. I want to emphasize contemporary voice, that a lot of our native folk community members across our state are doing some of the most amazing work either around food sovereignty or doing work around working with our youth, our elders. Just a lot. I can go columnist and on things in terms of things that they, a lot of our community members in our state engage in every single day. And so a lot of times for me, it's about making sure that those narratives or stories are being listened to and heard and also be included as part of our, or not just included in a part of our conversation, but integrated or infused into that piece. And so Ada is one of many different people who I definitely would love to, for folks to learn a lot more about. And there's obviously, you know, obviously others that are our state both today as well as from a historical lens.
Let's bring in Lori now in Shano. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd just like to ask Mr. O'Connor if there, I mean, throughout the country and in Wisconsin, of course, are the kids interested in preserving the language? I haven't heard anything about that. And it would be interesting to get native languages of the area in public schools just for everybody. I think that maybe there'd be some interest there in addition to the German and the Spanish and everything. And another comment I want to make is we've got St. Patty's Day, we've got Cinco de Mayo, we've got Independence Day, but we have no day of celebration for the native culture, as far as I know, and I think that's way overdue.
Lori, thank you. David, language preservation first.
Certainly. So just as context in Wisconsin, we do have about 15, 16 school districts, public school districts, that offer native languages as part of their instruction or part of their curriculum. I also get an opportunity to work with a couple of grants at our agency. We're working with our schools as well as tribal communities and helping revitalize those languages. But at the same time, we also have some of our younger learners as well as with another grant. And so there's, you know, I always believe there's a lot of work to be done, more good work to be done. But a lot of times I think those, like you, going back to the caller, I think for a lot of folks, it's, you know, we're trying, there's a lot of different nations either have some of those tribal language divisions that do amazing work in conjunction with our school districts. But there is ongoing efforts right now as we speak where folks are making sure that instruction, our tribal language instruction is included as part of our school curriculum.
Lori was also wondering about a recognition day of Native Americans and how to go about that, bringing more recognition. And you have said, you know, weaving it in through the year.
Yeah, you know, I as an Anishinaabe, when I wake up this morning, I'm Anishinaabe. When I go to bed later this evening, I'll be Anishinaabe. And, you know, I always try to tell people my history is my culture is. We talk about that should be included September 1st, August 31st, 365, 24/7. And so what I'm trying to say in a nice way is that it's every day. And when you have an opportunity to learn about a people and understand a people, that to me is celebrating a people.
Let's bring in Bill now in Barneville. Bill, hi.
Hi, just want to thank you for this great topic. Just a couple of thoughts and a question. I think what's, I'm not Native American. I'm a descendant of European immigrants to Wisconsin. And it's important to remember there's evidence that Native Americans have been in Wisconsin for 12,000 years, but Europeans have only been here for 400 years, about 3% of the span of Native Americans. But often, you know, we dominate most of the history in the history books here. I live near Mount Horeb, and they have a beautiful Driftless Historium and Historical Museum. And they do have one nice section on Native American culture of the area. But, you know, it doesn't take up 97% of the exhibit by any means. It's a good attempt. And I think this is important because we need, I think, to adopt more indigenous ways of thinking and being if we're going to save this planet. You know, for a long time, my own culture, European immigrants, we've had a very just straight extractive relationship with the earth, and that's gotten us to global climate change and everything else. And I think all of us are moving towards and need to be moving towards more of an indigenous relationship where it's more relational with the earth and transactional, not just taking in one direction. So this is fantastic and very important. The question is, you know, one of the constraints is there aren't a lot of available records of the 12,000-year history of Native Americans in Wisconsin. A lot of it was oral history. There are some sort of written records in, like, Native American rock art, especially in the Driftless area and artifacts. So how does Mr. O'Connor, how do they deal with the challenges of speaking about the history over such a long span where you don't have a lot of records like you do of, the Roman Empire or the Greeks and so forth?
Bill, thank you for that question, those thoughts, and we're going to get at some of those answers here on the other side of this newscast. So please do stick around as we talk with David O'Connor, American Indian Studies consultant at DPI, as we explore how teachers across the state are building their curriculum, elevating the stories of First Nations. You can join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up and dig into Bill's comments here right after this news update on the Ideas Network. We're learning about the stories of Indigenous peoples in Wisconsin and how to pass on the knowledge with care to the next generation. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. A 2019 report by the National Congress of American Indians, it looked at state-by-state efforts to provide education about Native peoples and communities. It found Wisconsin was one of just eight states to provide statewide curriculum in this area. What questions do you have about how Native American studies is taught in schools? Join in 800-642-1234. David O'Connor is with DPI, helping districts in providing instruction on the history, culture, and tribal sovereignty of Wisconsin First Nations. David, we were talking there with Bill in Barneville, who had a couple of reflections. One is that adopting Indigenous ways of thinking and being more relational with the environment, not transactional in experiencing our world. And the heart of his question was also about records and artifacts of Native peoples and how that is located. Go ahead.
Sure. And so each of our nations in Wisconsin have what we call tribal historic preservation offices. Many of these have individuals that work with a lot of our community members in those nations directly. And so a lot of times, maybe we may not historically had, like you said, a lot of information documented that was talked about. But I always tell people that, it's the documentation is listening to our elders speak, listening to our storytellers. They're telling a lot of our histories and our cultures through those stories or narratives. And a lot of times, and so, I think, a lot of times that's why I think it's key or a step in the right direction that we have not only have relationships with our First Nations in Wisconsin, but be more intentional about that or that, how that relationship is, meaning that have an opportunity not to only to listen and learn, but also to think about, how you can support as well. So I always believe that in the work that I engage in every day, I always tell people a lot of work. I hope I offer a lot of, but also I learn from a lot of folks that are around me as well. And so it's got to be a two-way street. And so I think that when you think about some of our folks that are in those positions in those our nations, they do some of the most amazing work to maintaining our histories and cultures, but making sure that they're carried on for future generations as well.
What do you think about this through the lens of climate change and through our relationship with our environment around us and adopting, as Bill said, more Indigenous ways of thinking as we look at climate change?
Sure. As the stewards of this land, and I think, and not only historically, but continue to be, a lot of times, I always remind folks is that, a big piece of this, of the environment, we depend on it. The animals, a lot of these other living things, I've always been taught this from my elders, learned this from my father. I think, a lot of times, when I was in school, I always learned about things that, human beings were at, in a sense, at the top. And as I always learned that we are at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Everything else we need everything. They don't need us. And so a lot of times you got to have that relationship with the environment around you, meaning that You got to be a caretaker of it because it takes care of you. So in a sense, it's your mother, it's your father. That's why you look at it. And so a lot of times it's little things that make, trying to make a better world for tomorrow. Like kind of going back to what we talked about earlier. I want to, when I leave this world, I want to leave a better place for my two daughters. And I want that, and not only think about them, but I also want to think about a lot of people always refer in our communities, seven generations ahead. And which I always tell people, if you think about it from this lens, think about the land that we're on, we're talking about, when a lot of my ancestors signed those treaties back in the mid-1800s, as an example, they weren't thinking about themselves then. They were thinking about today. And hopefully they'll think about another seven generations ahead as well. And so that's my job and that's my role, along with other community members' roles, to make sure we continue that, making sure we have a better world today as well as for tomorrow.
Let's bring in Mark now in Kimberley with thoughts. Hi, Mark.
Hi. In 1970, for I guess the first time in American history, some land was returned to Bloom Lake in New Mexico. And it was because a senator from Oklahoma and his wife, LaDonna, it's Fred Harris and his wife, LaDonna, were a first interracial couple to come to Congress. And they, at the time, they moved to Virginia, and it was illegal to be an interracial couple there. But she had some skills, LaDonna, she was half Comanche. And she had some persuasion skills that come from the Apache way of making someone you want to persuade family. And so it was Nixon that signed this over. It was national park land since 1906, which made it possible. And one of his aides, a lawyer, a woman lawyer, Bobby something, had served an internship on that Taos Pueblo, a legal internship in there. So they approached her and they persuaded her, made her family. And that allowed them to, they had somebody inside the administration to influence Nixon. They proceeded similarly with Congress, and they did all kinds of campaigning
on the federal level with yeah. those pressures. Yeah. David, what do you see at the federal level with lands and where we are today?
I think, a lot of times, I kind of talk about both state as well as at the federal level as example. And I think, a lot of our nations are, in their work in terms of, with that work specifically is that trying to work with our federal government as well as state governments to make sure that the lands that, either traditionally were occupied or continue to be maintained. We have that space for us in terms of making sure that new table be utilized, I guess you could say. And so as an example, as I talked about earlier about the treaty rights of Ojibwe, we retained our right to hunt, fish, and gather on reservation as well as in the ceded territory, which is basically not only our six reservations in northern Wisconsin, but also on those, basically the ceded land, which would be Wausau, or all the way over to Marinette, all the way over to Eau Claire on up. And so think about how we make sure that, as we exercise our rights, our retained rights as Ojibwe, to maintain our responsibilities, our rights to that land as well.
We're talking with David O'Connor, who is a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, Northern Wisconsin, and the American Indian Studies Consultant for the State Department of Public Instruction. You can join in. Have you read historical accounts of Wisconsin First Nations? What stood out to you as you learned this history? Join in at 800-642-1234. David, I want to ask you about breaking down stereotypes, discussing stereotypes, and how you go about that work. What does that look like?
Sure. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about teaching culturally. And so for me, It's how you, when you get to that space, I would even before that, I'd even talk about, you know, what is culture? And so, you know, one of the first things I always ask, you know, ask people to define, goes back to what we talked about earlier, is that it's that foods, festivities, heroes, and holidays. But something I learned from an elder and an educator a while back when I first started teaching in this area is that, you know, culture is two words. It's relationship or relationships plus meaning. And so when I think about what does that mean, tackling stereotypes, biases, a lot of times I always want people to always recognize that when we talk about Native people, it's, you know, it's not just a Native culture, there's Native cultures. And so making sure that, you know, individuals or our folks understand that we as members are multiple nations. You know, there's 574 federally recognized nations across the United States. There's over 60 plus state recognized nations. We're not all the same. I also want to make you think about how we educate teachers and members about the biases that what they bring to the classroom themselves. A lot of times it's making sure that we have both that, like I said, talked about earlier, not only that historical lens, but that contemporary lens as well, and contemporary voice. And so a lot of times what I try to encourage educators to do is take that time and effort to get to know your American Indian neighbors. Understand that they're not only our neighbors in a sense in a state, but they're our friends. They may be your family members. They may be your lawyer, your doctor, your teacher. And so a lot of times when you break down, when you look at it from that lens, you start seeing them as people, not see them as trying to look at some of the things that may be misappropriated towards business people, either through misconceptions or misunderstandings a lot of times. And so, and even, you know, and I think about that, I just want to make sure that when you get to that place, I always think that's not only a step in the right direction, but then you start forming those relationships, kind of going back to what I was talking about earlier about what is culture.
Yeah. And you probably have a much more deeper, richer relationship and better off in life for it, I would imagine.
I definitely agree. You know, I think, you know, a lot of times when I come into trainings where I get opportunity to work with our amazing educators in the state, it's a lot of times I have to help them unpack that. Because think about this, you know, if I've been teaching for 30 years, the same lesson plan, and I've been learning about that my whole life before that, and now you're challenging me to think that maybe that's not correct. A lot of times people either maybe get guilt or defensive, and that's not what I want them to understand. It's not go to that place. Is that, you know, we can think about how we can move this work forward, you know, the next 5-6 years that you teach. And so, and I've seen teachers tell me, you know, they came to my training or session, they said, David, you know, I make that journey, you know, a couple years now into my teaching and learning, that where I took what you taught or provided, and I transitioned into my teaching and learning today, it looks different. Mm-hmm. And so this one teacher always comes to mind. She said, every time I have a conversation with her, I would say she's about 175 out of 180 on turning her lesson plan around on this one couple topics that she teaches. And the reason why I don't give her a 180 out of 180 and I share that with her is because she still holds on what she taught in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you can't change that, but you can change what next 5-6 years of what you do in your classroom. Mm-hmm. It's focus on that. And so always trying to look at the glass half full, trying to find the positive. That's why I always try to challenge not only the participants, challenge myself in terms of my work or my training opportunities I provide.
David O'Connor is American Indian Studies Consultant at DPI, Department of Public Instruction. He presents conferences, workshops all over the state on Native American education and studies. Still time to talk about how to transform teaching and learning about Native peoples, what stories, histories, knowledge were left out of your K-12 education. Join in, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with David O'Connor here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The National Museum of the American Indian has this program called Native Knowledge 360. It was created to provide accurate resources to K-12 educators. One practice it recommends is to acknowledge the lands you live on and name the indigenous people originally from there. Have you done that before? What did that exercise cause you to think and feel? 800-642-1234. We have David O'Connor with us, American Indian Studies Consultant at DPI, Department of Public Instruction, and he's with us for about 9 more minutes. Monique is with us from Plainfield with a question. Hi, Monique, go ahead.
Hi, wonderful to listen to the program today. I'm enjoying it very much. I live in the very central Wisconsin area, and I have not been able to find any information on which peoples originally lived in the area, but many years ago, my husband actually found 7 arrowheads in one location. It was an agricultural location at the time. It has since been set aside as public land. And so I'm wondering what peoples those arrowheads would have originated from. And also, is there something that we should be doing with them? I mean, we've had them all these years, but should they have been donated to a museum or something?
Monique, thank you. David.
Certainly, going back to your initial question about land, you know, so one of our fortunate opportunities, I got an opportunity to engage in with work with either being some other state agencies or tribal nations in Wisconsin. We definitely have some different maps that you can use to locate maybe traditional lands that were occupied. A good resource on that is called Native Land. We also have some of our other resources, either being our current tribal lands maps that we have created, or the Ways map. It's a programming I would definitely encourage you to check out, hearing individual stories. And so I'll give you some good information about seeing about whose land that you may currently reside on historically. But in terms of the other question regarding, and a lot of those resources I want to emphasize are on the DPI American Indian Studies Program website, which is the website I oversee, as well as the Wisconsin First Nations website, which is two great websites I'd highly encourage you to check out, that you can locate resources and materials, not only for just teaching and learning, but just for your own personal growth or learning as well. In terms of the second question, I would definitely, going back to that I shared earlier, I would definitely reach out to our tribal historic preservation offices. You can find those contacts both on my website as well as on the Wisconsin Historical Society website. Definitely encourage you to reach out to some of those nations. Each of our nations have websites as well in our state. Also think about connecting with our tribal museums and or libraries as well. Something I wish I wanted to include as well early on, talk about preserving our stories, I guess you could say, as well.
Yeah. Monique, thank you for those questions. Let's touch on mascots for a moment, David. And I know this high school I went to in Minneapolis was, back in the 80s, one of the first in the country to change its mascot. And I remember that change so vividly. Other schools, other teams have followed suit in decades since, but there's been a whole lot of resistance. How do you feel about Native American mascots?
Now, you know, the one thing that I always talk about is, like anything, when people have ideas about certain things, especially if it holds part of their identity, whatever the case may be. But for me, when you think about mascots, I think there's an opportunity for us to move that work forward and retire them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, going back to what I was talking about earlier in terms of, if I learn about a people, and I understand both not only their histories, their cultures, their contemporary stories and voices, after a while, you probably won't see them as an imagery or a mascot or different things. You start seeing them as people. Like I said, see them as a family member, see them as one of your community members. And I think a lot of times you think about a lot of times when I have these conversations about it's, you know, mascots not only impact, you know, Native people, but it also impacts the negative effects on all students. Yeah. As example, you know, if you start seeing these imagery time and time again, after a while, you start believing that's the truth. When in reality, a lot of those imagery that you see either on online or through media or whatever the case may be. More often than not, we as individuals, as Native people, never had input on that. And so I always think it's, you know, for me, I think it's a good way to say that, you know, when you think about these imagery, these logos or whatever the case may be, we can retire them. And like I said, for me, it's about me. It's about having an opportunity to learn about the people that we're suggesting we're talking about, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Let's bring in Teresa now in Racine. Teresa, hi. Looking for book recommendations?
Yeah, I teach high school English, and I would like to incorporate Native American, Wisconsin Native American literature, or maybe nonfiction, but maybe literature into the curriculum. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions, or maybe I missed it if you mentioned that earlier.
No, great question, Teresa. David?
Oh, it's great. It is a great question. I get that quite a bit. Like I said, you know, like I said, going back to the resource I talked about just a few moments ago, on the Wisconsin First Nations website, as an example, if you go there, you can click on, you can break it down the resource type to refine your search either by treaty lands, either being by nation. So the Brotherton, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Ojibwe, Oneida, Potawatomi, and Stockbridge. You also break it down by grade level on the website, so being a PK through 2, all the way through 9 through 12. And you can also break it down by resource type. And so I would strongly encourage you to check out that as a good example. And you can see what different books are available on there as examples. And so a lot of amazing Native authors, both here in Wisconsin, as well as, you know, in this, the Great Lakes region, as well as across the U.S., that I would definitely strongly encourage you to check out. And so one name that comes to mind right away that is in our region of the Central Great Lakes region, I guess you could say, Louise Erdrich's work, Birchbark House as example, and other different books that she has written. Some of the most amazing work that I would strongly encourage you to check out as good examples of literature would be good for not only for yourself, but as well as for your students.
Teresa, thank you. We also have links at WPR.org/mornings to David's sites. And, you know, David, you also consult on the education of Native American students. And we know from the data that there is a much higher dropout rate, really disturbing trends compared to students from other demographic groups. Any insights there? What is going on?
Sure. So, as you talked about, a lot of my work that I do in the state is work with educators. And so a lot of that work I try to do is trying to think about help them figure out ways that we can help reduce some of our issues, but also build on some of the strengths that are taking place. A lot of times I always think it's, you know, it's one thing to talk about some of the issues, but also I want to think about some of the things that are going well and build on those. And I don't want to say weaknesses because that's not a term I use. I would say need.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times it's, you know, helping school districts or working with school districts or other entities or individual educators and having them understand how they can maybe grow their practice or change maybe some things that they do to better help support their students or reach out or work with them.
David, thank you for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it, Kate. I just want to also real quick, just want a big shout out for Teacher Appreciation Week. And so
yes, it is.
I just want to say Miigwech, which is Ojibwe, for thank you to all of our educators for everything they do every single day for our students, our families, our communities, as well as our nations of Wisconsin. And so
this is
I appreciate it to be
the Ideas Network.